What's going on, guys? I'm Cristiano Oliveira from the Benfica Podcast, and you're listening to the Seleção Podcast.
Bem jogado por Simão, a passar por dois adversários, Simão, a tentar oferecer o gol a Figo, e a bola é gol! O gol da Figo!
Rui Costa vai, Rui Costa vai, acreditou, vai tirar para o golo, atira o golo! 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 Golo!
And we welcome you to episode number 22 of the Seleção Podcast, a proud partner of Portugal.net. My name is Danny Pinto. I am your host. Thank you guys once again for tuning in to the show, as obviously we're feeling a lot better after two big European qualifying wins against Serbia and Lithuania, and we are definitely back on track for Euro 2020. Don't forget to check us out on our website, SeleçãoPod.com. Check us out on Facebook, Facebook.com/SeleçãoPod. Of course, you can always follow us on Twitter and on Instagram. Both handles are at SeleçãoPod. And don't forget to give us a five-star review, whether it be on Apple Podcasts or any of your podcasting platforms. We have a great show for you coming up here on episode number 22, as we will be joined by Marino Peixote, a Portuguese football enthusiast and journalist who obviously covers the Seleção and Portuguese football. Very excited to have him on. He'll share his thoughts on the two matches that went down in Serbia and in Lithuania. But let's not waste any time. Let's go to the matches. We'll take a look at the matches first. I'll give you my thoughts on those matches, and then we'll get to the Marino Peixote interview, and then we'll give you guys, after the interview, a little bit of a preview of what's to come on the Seleção schedule with four qualifiers left to go. But let's go to Serbia. Let's go to the starting lineup. Let's go to the starting 11 for Fernand Sanc. And it went like this. It was Rui Patrício in goal, Rafael Guerreiro on the left, Ruben Dias and José Font as the center backs, with Nelson Smith getting the start at right back. In the middle, it would be William Carvalho and Danilo playing the defensive midfielder's role, with Bruno Fernandes and Bernard Silva on the wings. And up top, they were joined by Gonçalo Guedes and captain Cristiano Ronaldo. So that's your starting 11 for the match against Serbia. I would say in the first half, it was like a tale of two 20-minute halves. I think you could safely say that Portugal was in control for the first 20 minutes of play, but could not find the back of the net. The same could be said for the next 20 minutes of play on the Serbian side, as they got things going a little bit on the offensive side of the pitch, but they too could not break through. And it was an obvious stalemate in the first 40 minutes of play, but in the 42nd minute, Portugal would find a way to break through and get the first goal of the match.
Bernardo Silva. Semedo on the outside. William Carvalho goes in, and William Carvalho stabs it over the line! And Portugal lead in the 42nd minute. A scruffy, scrappy goal, but the European champions have edged in front just before the break.
Yeah, that goal by William Carvalho, that ball serviced by Bruno Fernandes, a little bit of a scrum, for the lack of a better term, in front of the net. And William Carvalho was able to put it away to give the Seleção a 1-0 lead, a 1-0 lead that they would take to the half. We go now to the 58th minute, and in my opinion, out of the 9 goals, and yes, folks, 9 goals that the Seleção scored in these two games, I would say this one by Gonçalo Guedes in the 58th minute was the best of them all.
Bernardo Silva once more. Defenders know he wants to go inside. Ronaldo's left, Bruno Fernandes. Guedes, lovely work. Guedes, super goal. Maybe the night the defending champions put themselves back in the Group B frame. The man who scored the UEFA Nations League winning goal against the Dutch in June has given them a 2-goal cushion.
Really good individual play here. Still a lot for him to do. Threatens to shoot with his right foot, takes it away from the defender, and on his left foot, back across the goal. That's the moment where he just opens itself up for it. And what a good finish it is.
I'd like to thank the PA announcer in Serbia for being so loud on that one. But yeah, just an absolutely wonderful goal by Gonçalo Guedes. Again, Bruno Fernandes in the middle of that one. He actually got the assist in this on this goal. But Gonçalo Guedes, just, you know, a great individual effort, completely getting the defender off balance and scoring across the goal to the right hand side of the goal with a beautiful left footed strike to get us to 2-0. So right around the 60 minute mark, about half an hour, you know, left to go, we're feeling good, we're feeling all right, and all of a sudden in the 68th minute, Serbia they hit back. They get a header off of a corner, which is something that we'll talk about in a little bit later on in the episode. But Milenkovic, he finds the back of the net off of a header and cuts this Serbian deficit from 2-0 to 2-1. So that puts Serbia right back in the game. But in the 80th minute, it would be Portugal retaking a two-goal lead off of this goal from Cristiano Ronaldo.
Ronaldo Silva given space to run here and space to find Ronaldo! And he's got his goal at last! Cristiano Ronaldo, the headline act for the European champions. And Dimitrovic left exposed here with the killer through ball from Bernardo Silva.
And it was a killer through ball, by all intents and purposes, by Bernard Silva. On the replay, you could make an argument that Ronaldo was a tad offside, based on that, on the only angle that they showed. But you know, we'll take it. You know, there's been many times, David Villa, where we have gotten the short end of the stick on those calls. So we'll take one to even out that one. So it is 3-1 now after the 80th minute. But again, here comes Serbia as Mitrovic would beat Ruben Dias and then just hit a rocket that beat Rui Patrice in the top left corner to make it 3-2 after the 85th minute. But it would be Bernard Silva who got that beautiful pass to Ronaldo to make it 3-1 to seal the deal from a great pass from Rafael Guerreiro to make it 4-2.
The gaps in the Serbian defense, 4-3 momentarily. Bernardo Silva can pass it in and re-establish a winning margin for Portugal now. Just as Serbia think they found a way back. They leave gaps, they leave holes, and Portugal have the quality, they have the players to punish them.
And 4-2 is how this one would end. Portugal goes to Serbia, gets a much-needed 3 points, and now we shift our focus over to Lithuania, as the starting 11 for the Lithuania match was as follows. Patrice, once again in goal. Rafael Guerreiro on the left. It would be João Cancelo, who came in for an injured Nelson Smith in the Serbia game. Nelson Smith was not available for the Lithuania match after injuring his foot, his ankle. So it would be João Cancelo getting the start with Ruben Dias once again with José Font in the middle. It would be William in the middle, this time with Ruben Neves. Danilo would sit this one out, would not start the match, along with Bruno Fernandes and Bernard Silva on the wings. And João Félix would get the start in this match alongside Cristiano Ronaldo. And, you know, artificial surface, maybe a lack of focus because of a lower caliber of an opponent. This first half was something that was not to be desired if you're a fan of the Celeste song. But we do get off on the right foot in the seventh minute when an individual effort by João Félix results in a penalty call, and it would be CR7 to convert.
Here is the teenage sensation. Lovely bit of skill initially, and he's won his team a portrait. Well, in fact, it's a penalty. The referee, when some thought it might be a corner, but the Dutch referee has given Portugal a penalty here.
Well, that was really good play. So he just lets the ball run across his body there. Gets himself towards the byline. And it's Alanis, the player, and it hits. I'm sure he knows too much about it. The referee says he's got his arm in an unnatural position. I'm not sure that's the case. You've got to give yourself balance. He's a bit unlucky there.
Seventh minute, Cristiano Ronaldo for 90 Portugal goals, and it was never in doubt.
And Ronaldo obviously converting that PK, he gets to 90. He would get a few more in this match, but again, it was a well hit penalty to give the Slesong a 1-0 lead. I disagree with the analysis from Stu Robson from ESPN, and these highlights obviously are coming from ESPN. But I thought the arm was in an unnatural defending position, and when the ball struck the arm, I definitely thought it was a legit penalty call. So I disagree with Robson's analysis there. But again, as I mentioned in the, a few minutes ago, this first half, Portugal seemed unsure. They seemed unsettled. Again, a synthetic surface or not, whatever the case is, they just never looked comfortable in the first half, especially with the ball at their feet. They lost a lot of possession, either with unsure passes or just not being comfortable with the ball. And it showed throughout the first half. If we fast forward over to the 27th minute, Lithuania would tie this match. Again, a corner off of a corner. It would be Andreas Kevičius with another header. João Félix did his best, I think, individually trying to defend that one. But again, it was poor marking on a set piece on a corner. And it cost the Slesong to even up the score at 1-1. And that's what we had. And that's where we're at halftime. So, again, not the scoreline at the half that many of us expected. I predicted it would be an absolute onslaught in this match, and it ended up being that. But not until about the 62nd minute here, as you could see in the second half, as we moved to the second half, you could see that it started to click with the Slesong, and it was only a matter of time before they started showing their quality versus Lithuania. But in terms of quality, even though this would be Ronaldo's second goal, this was not the most quality goal he's ever scored.
Nice disguise on the pass. Rafa Silva finds Ronaldo. Ronaldo just got away from Kuklis and the goalkeeper. Oh, what an unfortunate error from Šetkus. It's a comedy of errors from Lithuania's goalkeeper.
So right from the jump, Ronaldo did not hit that ball great. It's almost like the ball jammed him up when he decided to take the shot. It must have taken just some wicked spin on the way to the goalkeeper, because once the Lithuanian goalkeeper blocked it, the ball popped up, hit him in the shoulder, hit him on the back, and then spun into the goal to make it a 2-1 lead, which obviously this Slesong would never relinquish. But in terms of quality of goals, not the best one. But just 3 minutes later, Ronaldo left no doubt that Portugal were here to win the game.
Here's Rafa Silva. Bernardo Silva. Cristiano Ronaldo. They left him. They left him. And they left him. And you cannot do that against a living legend.
That would officially be later on a hat trick for Cristiano Ronaldo. And what's better than scoring three goals? Well, how about scoring four?
Rafa Silva. Bernardo Silva with a lot of space to work with. Cristiano Ronaldo! Hat trick! The team growing in momentum. The gap on Ukraine is closing.
Yeah, at that time of the goal call there, they had called the second goal that Ronaldo had scored an own goal on the Lithuanian goalkeeper, but that would officially be changed later on after the match. So that would be four for Cristiano Ronaldo, 93 for his international career. He also becomes the all-time leading scorer in European qualifying competition, passing Robbie Keane in the process. He started with 21, Keane had 23. 21 plus 4, 25. So now he sits alone with another record to his name, the greatest of all time. Cristiano Ronaldo now sits atop the European qualifying all-time scoring list. So it's 4-1 Obviously, the game is in hand, and I would say the way you start is the way you finish. So how about another goal for the man who started it off in Serbia, William Kudvall?
Geresh with a run over Rafa Silva, on by Ruben Dias. Still not clear, William Carvalho with a toe poke for number five. Well, it rounds off another big away day scoreline for Portugal.
Yeah, William Carvalho scoring in consecutive matches for Portugal for the first time in his career. Again, in terms of scoring goals, not the prettiest we've ever seen, but we'll definitely take that that output from him every single time to go along with just his great play in the field there. So 5-1 the final against Lithuania, 4-2 the final against Serbia. Obviously, the positives, 9 goals in 2 matches, just a great way to get back on the right foot in European qualifying following 1 goal in 2 matches at home against Ukraine and Serbia. And speaking of Ukraine, the gap is now 5 points with a game in hand. And we'll talk about the rest of the schedule, the upcoming schedule, which includes the big match in Ukraine in October, a little bit after the interview with Marino Peixot. But the Selecion did exactly what they needed to do, which was max out the points here in these 2 matches against Serbia and Lithuania and get themselves back in contention for qualification, not only qualification, but to win this group to get to Euro 2020. So, I mean, there are a lot of positives. Obviously, Ronaldo, again, there's no more superlative. I don't think there's another superlative that exists that hasn't already been used to describe just how important and just how great he is and has been for this Selecion. He just continues to be on another level when it comes to scoring goals. And as long as he's healthy and continues to keep himself in great shape, he's going to be a problem for opposing countries for a while. There's no slowing down in his future at the moment. Obviously, I see him playing in Euro 2020. I see him playing in the World Cup in 2022 if the Selecion qualifies. Could he play into his 40s? He's mentioned it in an interview a few weeks back where he said, I could retire next year. I could play into my 40s. The sky's the limit as long as he continues to keep himself healthy and continues to be as driven. And that's the thing, too. When you get to a standard of play and a superstardom that he's achieved, the greats find a way to stay on top and to continue to be on top and not take their success for granted. And I think he's a prime example of that. There are guys who get to the top and they just be like, yeah, you know what? I've reached the pinnacle. There's no need to try anymore. I've done what I've wanted to do. He not only has reached the pinnacle, he has stayed at the pinnacle. And if there is another level that he has not reached yet, he's searching for it. And when you have someone that driven to go along with the absolute once in a lifetime talent that Cristiano Ronaldo possesses, we as Selecion fans are absolutely lucky to be able to watch this happen right in front of our eyes, because there has never been anyone like him, and who knows if there will ever be anyone again. You'll hear this in the interview with Marino Peixot, but there is no doubt in my mind that Bernard Silva is the best player that Ronaldo has played with outside of Luis Figue, and their partnership is something that is growing right before our eyes. Bernard Silva, a goal and 3 assists in these 2 matches. He's got 5 assists, 3 of them game-winning assists in his last 4 Selecion victories, which included the semifinals and finals of the Nations League. He has by far come into his own and is clearly the number 2 man for the Selecion. And it's great to see a quality player and I don't know if he's even hit his prime yet. And that's the scary part for the opposition is Bernard Silva is doing this, and he's playing so well at Man City, and he's indoctrinated himself into the Selecion now in the last few months, where him and Ronaldo are a great 1-2 punch, and they're going to be a great 1-2 punch for the foreseeable future. And then you look at the talent around coming up, that will, once Ronaldo ends up retiring, and again, that could be in 2 years, could be in 4 years, could be in 8, 10 years. Jeez, could you imagine him playing at 44? I still think he could probably get a game somewhere at 44, but there's a lot of talent on this squad, and the fact that there's, not that there's a baton that is being passed, but that the transition from quality player to quality player will be less of a hit because of how good Bernard Silva has been and is going to continue to be, I think is a great positive for the Seleção. In terms of the negatives, there weren't many, but I will say that I you will obviously take one goal in the field of play in two matches. That's the, you know, that we'll take that, and that goal by the Serbian striker Mitrovic was a good one. But the concerning thing is the two goals that were suffered on the set pieces on the corners. Not the best performance by our back four in these two matches. Again, they were not terrible. They were not subpar, in my opinion. But they are, when you give up two set pieces, when you give up two corners, and you give up goals on those corners, that's a little alarming because they've been so good in the back. Whether it's Pep and Ruben Dias or Josef Font and Ruben Dias, I would say the last, you know, especially in the Nations League, I thought they both those combinations before Pep got hurt were working, and not that it's not working now, but there's definitely something off in these two matches in our defense in the defense, I should say, of the set pieces. It's not a cause for concern to me at this moment, given that the results are what they are, and this team seems to step up to the challenge when called upon, and you saw that in the Nations League semis and finals. I think the number one objective was to get some goals in these two matches. You don't want to suffer two like they did on set pieces, but I think that's a forgivable offense in this sense, just because of the amount of goals and what the goal was to score the goals for any kind of goal differential that may come our way with Ukraine in the last four matches of this group stage. So again, not the greatest performances, but I don't think it's anything to be too alarmed about. I'm actually very comfortable with the back four the way it is. If you want to interchange João Cancelo, Nelson Smith, and depending on Nelson Smith's injury, but Rafael Guerreiro, not great, but I thought a pretty above average performance. I still think he may not be playing his best position, and at left back, he's not going to be. I don't think he's going to be the same player he was in 2016 for us, playing the left back. But I think he's still serviceable. I think he does a great job. And João Cancelo and Nelson Smith, again, nothing too egregious in terms of errors, but you know, again, not setting the world on fire. But all we have to do, in my opinion, is get a solid effort from the back four, which is, I think, what we got overall. If you give us a solid effort, the firepower that comes with this team should be a good enough combination to win a lot of matches. And that's where I think where the Seleção is right now is if you do enough on the back end and you can put goals in the back of the net on the other, you're going to find yourself in a lot of matches where you're winning, you know, 3-1, 4-1, you know, 4-2. So I'm not as worried as some other folks are. Obviously, the low hanging fruit is Fech getting the call up for the injured Pep. He obviously will get there eventually. I just don't know when that is, and I don't think we need to force that. When I think a guy who's very underrated in Josef Font continues to be a quality option for Fernand Santos. And I think Ruben Dias is obviously, even though he, you know, was not at fault, but just he was defending the second goal in the Serbia match. I think he's just coming into his own, and he's got a very, very bright future for this Seleção as their center back for years to come. So, a lot of positives, a few negatives. Obviously, a lot of people questioning, but just wondering, you know, what's up with Bruno Fernandes. I just think he just hasn't found the right spot, the right kind of rhythm with the Celeste song yet, but I don't think it's anything to worry about at this point. And I just think you keep putting him out there and you keep trying to figure out exactly where he fits best. And I honestly think he'll be fine. He has too much quality not to flourish with the Celeste song for years to come. So that's a look at the two matches. Obviously, two huge important wins for the Celeste song, and we as fans can't be any more thrilled by getting those 6 points and getting us back in contention for winning the group for European 2020 qualifying. But without further ado, let's get some thoughts from a man who covers the Celeste song. An enthusiast, a journalist. He is Marino Peixot, and you are listening to episode number 22 of the Celeste Song Podcast. So you've heard my thoughts on the two must-win matches that Portugal have just pulled off in European qualifying. They are now 5 points back of Ukraine with a game in hand. Obviously, the big match coming up in October the 14th, when the Celeste Song travels to Ukraine. But before we talk about that, let's get some thoughts from Marino Peixot. Marino is a football enthusiast and journalist, and he obviously covers the Celeste Song and everything Portuguese football. He's kind enough to join us for a few moments here on episode number 22 of the Celeste Song Podcast. Marino, how you doing, sir?
I'm very well, thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on. You know, I don't know what's been more elusive, the ball at the Celeste Song's feet in that Lithuania game, or us trying to finally get you on, man. But I'm glad we finally made some time.
No, I know. I apologize. I've been a busy guy over summer, but yeah, I'm very glad to be here at last.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, Marino, he's done a little bit of work on CNN as a. We'll call you a pundit. Well, some terminology out there, but he's done some.
That's a very generous term.
I'm feeling very generous right now. But he's done some work for Copa 90, and he's just an overall Celeste Song enthusiast and journalist, and we're just thrilled to have him on. But Marino, let's get right into it. What were your overall thoughts of the matches versus Serbia and Lithuania?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, when it comes to group games in these qualifiers, whether it's for the World Cup or the Euros, the games are usually not that pretty because you're playing against far inferior opposition, which at times is really difficult to do. Because, I mean, most of our players are used to playing against world-class players week in, week out for their clubs. So these games are always an anomaly. They're always difficult to play in. So obviously, yesterday's game in particular wasn't very easy on the eye. Serbia was a bit better because obviously they're a better team, so it's easier for Portugal to play and accustom to that particular style. But all that matters in these qualifiers is getting the 3 points, which we did. Scored 9 goals over 2 games, conceded 3. I mean, the defense was quite shaky at times, but I mean, we scored 9 goals, we won both games, 6 points, and now I think we're well on our way to securing qualification for the Euros. So yeah, I can't really say too many negative things about that, to be honest.
Yeah, in terms of what the objective was in these two games, objective was reached with getting the 6 points and getting the qualification back on track. What were some positives that you saw in these two matches besides the 9 goals being scored, which obviously was an issue after drawing and only scoring 1 goal in the first two matches of qualifying?
Yeah, so I mean, Portugal in the past, as we all know, against inferior teams, we often struggle, as we did in regards to actually playing and creating chances yesterday. But in the past, Portugal probably wouldn't have got the result they did yesterday. So I definitely think they've got this newfound resolute approach whereby if they're not playing too well, they still manage to grind out a result, which I think is really important if you want to progress to the latter stages of these international competitions. As we saw in the Euros, it was from the Nations League, they're finding a way to win when they're not necessarily playing well all the time, which I think is really important and really exciting as well for us.
You're listening to episode number 22 of the Celeste Song Podcast. We are reviewing the two wins in European qualifying versus Serbia and Lithuania. We are joined by Marino Peixot here on episode number 22. You can follow Marino. He's a wonderful follow on Twitter. He'll give you a few opinions if you're into that sort of thing on our Celeste Song and Portuguese football. You can follow Marino on Twitter at Marino Peixot. That's M-A-R-I-N-O-P-E-I-X-O-T-O. Marino Peixot. So The positives obviously are getting the wins. We mentioned the shaky defense at times in these two qualifiers. What do you think attributes to that? Is it, you know, not having Pep back there, especially in the central defense? What do you think was were the factors for a bit of a shaky performance in these two qualifiers?
I think yesterday in particular, because Portugal dominated possession so much, and we only had two men in midfield, that there was a lot of space, and our midfielders failed to track the runs when they lost the ball. So obviously, when you've got four or five men counter-attacking you, when you're just two central defenders, obviously our wing backs are really high up the pitch as well. There's lots of space. So that obviously didn't help their cause yesterday. But I mean, like Font and Ruben Dias aren't that familiar with each other, even though they played exceptionally well against Holland in the Nations League final. So I think that could have something to do with it. Obviously, Font's aging limbs might have something to do with it. Ruben Dias and Pep have formed a pretty formidable partnership over the past year or so. So I'm not sure really. It could just be an anomaly. But like I said, the goals we conceded, I mean, two were from corners and one was just Bruno Fernandes losing the ball in midfield, and then Mitrovic hit the ball incredibly well, like Patricio had no chance. So I don't think it's necessarily as bad as people are making out. And obviously we know Fernando Sanches is very good tactically, and when it comes to a defensive approach, he's probably one of the best international football, so I'm not too worried on that part. I would have liked to have seen Ferro maybe, but like I said in my tweets like a couple of weeks back, when he got called up as a result of Pep's injuries, I knew that he wouldn't play just because he was essentially the fifth choice centre back and only got called up as a result of the injury. But no, I mean I'd like to see him integrated at some point, but I think the next Euros might be a bit too early for him, just because obviously Pep and Ruben Dias have formed such a great partnership together. So I think they will be our two go-to guys, and I think we'll be fine defensively.
Marina, let's talk about the Lithuania match. How much of a factor do you think the poor start? I wouldn't say poor, but just the struggles that the Selecion had in the first half. How much of that do you think is due to the synthetic turf and not being familiar with that pitch?
I mean, when you're a professional footballer, I don't think there should be too many excuses in regards to that, unless playing on an actual grass pitch, which is full of mud, because then like you can't do anything. It's not in your control. But with a synthetic pitch, you know the ball is going to bounce relatively perfectly. Synthetic pitches do hold the ball up slightly more, but they watered the pitch beforehand as well. So I don't really think it makes too much of a difference. I mean, I know in the first half, Ronaldo looked as though he was struggling. He couldn't really get a hold of the ball. He couldn't judge the flight of the ball too well when he was dribbling. But no, I don't really think it makes that much of a difference. Like Portugal played against, was it the Faroe Islands? Like 2 years ago, mm-hmm. The World Cup qualifiers, and won, was it 6-0 away and completely dominated the game. And that was also on a 4G pitch. So, I mean, personally, I know other people might disagree. I don't think it factors in too much in regards to how they play. I think they just struggled as a unit, like entirely. There was a severe lack of cohesion up top, and they were just relying on long shots and crosses, which they often do against the inferior teams. So yeah, in a nutshell, I don't think it made too much of a difference.
You're listening to episode number 22 of the Selecion podcast. I am your host, Danny Pinto. I am joined by Marino Peixoto. Let's talk about Bruno Fernandes for a second. It seemed, and through no fault of his own, it seemed that once he was subbed off for Rafa Silva in the second half of the Lithuania match, the goals came. Tactically, Bernard Silva moving a little bit more into the middle and seeing the ball a bit more. Obviously, there was a change in the offensive execution, but he's been one of the focal points. You know, one of the top four that so many of us have been waiting for with him: João Félix, Ronaldo, and Bernard Silva. Can you pinpoint what it is with him so far in his Selecion career that just hasn't been able to translate over to wearing the national team colors?
So I think in games like yesterday, when you have a team that's playing with essentially 10 men behind the ball, and you're also essentially playing with four midfielders, so Bernard Silva and Bruno kind of play as like inverted wingers, but there's a lot, it's very narrow and it's quite cramped. So I think it's difficult for him to do what he does. He's at his best when he's got space in front of him and he can dictate, he can play his through balls, he can take his long shots. He had no space yesterday whatsoever. And I think that's why he thrived so much in the game against Holland, because we were playing against a team that was also attacking Portugal, which obviously yields far more space for the creative players like Ronaldo and Bruno Fernandes. So I think that's why he struggled yesterday. But I don't think it's necessarily his fault. Obviously, I said at halftime that it was either going to be Gonçalo Guedes or Rafa to come on, because against teams like that, you need a lot more pace to open up. If you haven't got any pace, no one's going to break through the lines, and it's just going to be a wall of 10 of Lithuanians. And then basically all you can do is cross the ball or take long shots, because no one's got the pace to get in behind. So I obviously he didn't play too well, but I think that's the reason he struggles in that particular system, and Portugal in general, actually. I think against the inferior teams, they should go for like out-and-out wingers, so either Rafa or Gonçalo Guedes, because they just offer so much more and they can break through that barrier. Whereas against the better teams, the world-class teams, like the Hollands and the Frances and the Belgians, I think the formation that we, well, the starting 11 that we do normally go for would be far better suited to Portugal. So, yeah.
And you know, and it's not like he's outright struggling. I mean, he did serve the pass that William Kvaral eventually put away in the Serbia match, and then also had the assist on the Gonçalo Guedes goal in the Serbia match. So it's not like he's just out there not being able to do anything. But I agree with you. There's just something there that just is not clicking for him quite yet. And yeah, maybe in the bigger matches, as we saw in the Holland match in the Nations League final. The bigger the match, maybe the bigger the stage he'll get there and start showing out for the Slesong. In terms of two players showing out, obviously we've been waiting for someone during Cristiano Ronaldo's career, not obviously to be his equal, but to be his counterpart and to be his wingman, literally and both figuratively. And Bernard Silva has absolutely arrived. As a member of this Slesong, he's had a goal and three assists in these two qualifying matches. Counting the Nations League, he has three game winning assists. Counting back to the semifinal, final, and then these two qualifiers, so he is part of the engine that is running here and running at high octane for the Slesong. I would just touch a little bit on obviously his development and his importance to the team. And, of course, we can't forget about CR7 and the performance he had last night as well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, so what, in his last four games, I think he's got five assists and one goal. A lot of Portugal fans have questioned why it is he plays so well for Man City and then struggles to make an impact for Portugal. But I don't think anyone can doubt what he's done for Portugal in recent months. He's just been instrumental. He's actually, him and Ronaldo form such a formidable understanding and partnership with one another, which is what you want. I mean, they're two of the best players in the world from last season. Ronaldo's one of the best of all time, but Bernardo Silva's, I think he's just turned 25. His best years are ahead of him as well. So I think that understanding in particular is really important for Portugal if they do want to progress to the latter stages of these international tournaments. I'm still waiting to see if João Félix can obtain a better understanding with Ronaldo. I mean, he didn't play necessarily badly yesterday. He looks, I don't want to say lost, but I think he struggles to understand his role, and I think he struggles to understand Ronaldo's movements and where to go in the box, because I think he wants to do this.
Do you think he's pressing a little bit, wanting to maybe get that first goal, that first positive play, almost kind of out of his system, so that he could then just kind of get comfortable and then it just seems like his press is just a bit.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, any player would want to, wouldn't they? Especially a player that's got so much hype around him right now. So there's a lot of pressure on his young shoulders. But I think he'll come into his own. It's a learning curve, and Fernando Santos is still at this point trying to decipher what his best 11 is. So I think just with more qualifying games, with more playing time, alongside Ronaldo, training with him more, he'll gain a far better understanding. So if João Félix, Ronaldo and Bernardo Silva do end up finally clicking, I doubt there's a few more better front three partnerships in international football, maybe barring France's or Belgium's. But yeah, it will be incredibly exciting if and when they do click.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, Ronaldo in the beginning of his career, and not that this is a like-for-like comparison, but I think in the first, you know, 100 matches, I saw a stat last night where he had scored
37 goals.
Yeah, and then in the last 60, he scored 56. So obviously, it does take a while. The kid's only 19, 20 years old. It will take a while, but obviously the future is definitely bright for the Slesong. You're listening to episode number 22 of the Slesong podcast. We're joined by Marino Peixoto. You can follow Marino on Twitter at MarinoPeixoto. That's his first and last name, all in one word, nice and clean and tidy for you guys. But let's talk real quick about Fernand Santos. The stat yesterday, I believe you put it out. I believe other people put it out too. Is for a guy who gets as much what's the word I'm looking for? Grief as manager of this group. After the two draws, I was of the opinion that, you know, there needed to be, you know, everyone needed to calm down. You know, there's still plenty of time, you know, considering that it was a top two qualifying. I think there's always a bit of a FOMO feeling with Fernand Santos. There's a fear of missing out with all of this talent on the squad. With that said, 43 competitive matches. Is it two losses?
It depends if you count Confederations Cup.
Yeah, and so
it'd be
three.
Yeah, I think it's 2-43. So then it would be like 3-47, I think.
Yeah, so
still amazing.
The point is this: he has by far been the most successful manager in the history of this federation. And what is it about him? Other than it has to be either personality or tactics, but what is it that brings out so many, you know, so much negative reaction when the team, you know, plays either a bit under what everyone expects or it's a draw when we were expecting a win? He's the first person to get the ire of the fans and the pundits. So what do you think it is about Fernand Santos that draws that reaction?
I think it's just the perception people have of his style of play, perhaps. So obviously, winning the Euros was the biggest and best thing that's ever happened to Portuguese football. But it was the negative connotations surrounding that win from journalists and from other nations saying, well, obviously, we were heralded as the ugly ducklings. People said we were lucky. We only won one game in 90 minutes. So I think that has carried on since then. So when things are going well, people give him all the plaudits in the world, but then as soon as they don't see something, or as soon as they see something rather that they don't like, they're just so quick to jump on his back. Because I think nowadays when you have teams like Man City and Barcelona that play this amazing, like, free-flowing football, people expect the same from international football, when it's a different kind of football. Because international football, ultimately, there's no leagues, there's just qualifying groups, and then there is knockout stages in the international tournaments, and that's a different kind of football to league football. So if you look at France, for instance, in the World Cup, they won it, they had an amazing team, but they didn't necessarily play particularly well in any given game. They didn't play beautiful, free-flowing football. They were quite pragmatic in their approach. Because if ultimately in international football, if you don't concede or you don't lose, then you're going to go far. It's not like a league. You can lose a couple of games in the league and then still do well, whereas in international football, you can't. And that's what Fernand Santos, clearly with that record of two losses in 43 competitive games, has done for Portugal. I don't know. I think people just live too short term as well. They forget the success that he's brought. He's never been afraid to integrate youth. He's never been afraid to reward players for their good club form. I think he's brought in at least like 70, 80 players during his tenure for Portugal, which is pretty impressive. I think people just need to see the bigger picture and understand that you can't always play beautiful football. You can't win absolutely every single game. You can't always score 5, 6, 7 goals in a qualifying game, even if the opponents are inferior. I think people just need to have a little bit more faith in him. So yeah.
And it's a results driven business, and I would say in the last 3 years, the results kind of speak for themselves there with two trophies on the mantle here. So
exactly.
The prettiest football in the world, but I would definitely take the two trophies we have and play a quote unquote ugly way of football, then be called the most entertaining team in the tournament in 2006 and have nothing to show for it. So
exactly my point. Yeah.
Yeah. So finally, Marino, and we really appreciate your time on episode number 22 here. What can we take from these two matches, if anything, that Portugal can go ahead and take with them in these last four on their quest to qualify and defend their European championship?
I mean, like I said before, I think overcoming the adversities of last night's game, so obviously like in the form of not playing well, conceding to Lithuania, which was a massive surprise, and then just coming back out and scoring four goals in the second half, that's a massive positive. And it shows that they are resolute and it shows that they are capable of winning when they're not playing well. I still think Fernando Santos is yet to decipher what his best 11 is. And that's not just in regards to the players, it's the system as well. So whether it's like a 4-4-2 diamond type with like inverted wingers or 4-3-3, I still think he needs to figure out how best to use João Félix and Ronaldo. But I mean, it's not a bad problem to have. I mean, deciphering who's going to start is because like he's having these difficulties because there is so much quality now within the squad. He's got plenty of time before the Euros. There's plenty of games left to figure out that. I think you can only take positives, really. I know people focused heavily last night on the defence, but like I said before, I really don't think you have to worry about defensive capabilities when Fernando Santos is the coach. I think everyone should be a bit more positive in a nutshell, really. I don't understand all the negativity.
Imagine that, right?
Yeah.
Portuguese people being positive is not one of our strong suits. I don't believe.
I know. I think it's just coming from the fact that I was born in England, maybe. I don't know.
that's perhaps a double whammy there for you.
Yeah, I know, right?
Well, Marino, we can't thank you enough for joining us on this episode. So glad to finally get you on. I know we've been trying to get together here for a while since the inception of the podcast, but greatly appreciate your time, your insight, and hopefully we can do it soon.
No, of course. Thank you so much for having me, man.
And of course, do it again soon is what I meant right at the end there of the interview with Marino Peixoto. But our thanks once again for him coming on and giving us a breakdown of the matches involving the Seleção, getting the 6 max points against Serbia and Lithuania and getting us back on track for Euro 2020 qualification. Give him a follow on Twitter. He's a great follow on Twitter, at Marino Peixoto. That's MarinoPeixoto. Again, let him know how great of a job he did on this episode of the Seleção podcast and that we greatly appreciated his time and expertise. So before we get out of here, let's give you a current look at the standings. Group B of Euro 2020 qualifying. Ukraine, 5 matches played, 13 points. Portugal, 4 matches played, 8 points. Serbia, 5 matches, 7 points. Luxembourg, 5 matches, 4 points. And Lithuania in last place with just 1 point out of 5 matches. So obviously the Seleção with a game in hand, a match in hand on all 4 competitors. Obviously the focus is on Ukraine in order to win the group. And the matches left for the Seleção, 2 in October, 2 in November, to finish off the qualifying are these. October the 11th, they are home in Lisbon at Avalad to Luxembourg. Luxembourg coming to Lisbon to take on the Seleção on October the 11th. The Seleção will then travel 3 days later and play Ukraine in Kiev. So that is a game, obviously, if Portugal takes care of business against Luxembourg at home. That game, that match has huge implications, and we'll tell you in just a second what those could be. In November, the Seleção heads back home for their last match in Portugal in the qualifying, November the 14th, as they play host to Lithuania. That game will be in Algarve, and then they close out the qualifying on November the 17th on the road at Luxembourg. So let's highlight the two matches that happened on the 14th, the October 14th match against Ukraine, and then the November 14th match against Lithuania. If you go back even one match before that, Ukraine also plays October the 11th. They will be hosting a Lithuania, so that obviously is a match that they should win. So after October the 11th, both teams, if they take care of business at home, should go into that October 14th game in Kiev with a difference in 5 points between them. So if Portugal can pull off the victory in Ukraine, that's when the game in hand comes into play. The November 14th game, or the matches for that weekend, November 14th, November 15th, November 13th, whatever it is, the Ukraine is off. They do not play that weekend or that day. So that is where the game in hand comes into play. So if the Slesson beats Ukraine on October the 14th, and then they beat Lithuania at home, as they should, on November the 14th, then the Slesson would go into first place and go into the last match of qualifying, November 17th at Luxembourg, with a one-point lead and the absolute control in their hands of this group to win the group and to qualify in first place in Group B for Euro 2020. So we talked about it in the last episode. If you go 6-for-6, no matter what happens anywhere else, you get the group, you get the win, you get first place in Group B. But in terms of how it breaks down or how it can break down, they could get the deficit down to 2 points if they beat Luxembourg and then beat Ukraine, and then they can take the lead with a win at home to Lithuania and then take that one-point lead and hopefully secure themselves the group on November the 17th against Luxembourg. Is everybody with me here? Hopefully you are. That's a lot of math, and that's a lot of numbers. But bottom line is, you go 6-for-6, and now 4-for-4. You don't have to worry about anybody else, and that is a good spot to be in terms of having the control completely in your hands. So, my thanks again as we finish up here. My thanks again to Marino Peixot for coming on the Slesson podcast. Check him out on Twitter at Marino Peixot. That's MarinoPeixot. Again, give him a follow. Tell him how great of a job he did on the show. Check us out on our website, SlessonPod.com, Facebook.com/SlessonPod, on Twitter and on Instagram at SlessonPod. And of course, you can always give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or any of the platforms that you listen to this fine podcast. So my name is Danny Pinto. I have been your host. Thank you so much for listening to episode number 22. We are a proud partner of Portugal.net. Our thanks for all the support that we've been getting the last few months, and honestly, all of the support that we've been getting since the inception of this podcast. We greatly, greatly appreciate it. So let's end the show the way we always end the show, with a